Hello and welcome to another episode of The 1970. I'm your host, Ed, and joining me today is Mark Damon. We'll check in on him in just a second, but we want to congratulate Mauricio Pochettino. 3 games in as PSG manager and already has a trophy. PSG victorious today, Wednesday, January 13th, 2-1 over rivals Marseille in the Trophée des Champions. Let's talk to Mark Damon, my co-host. Mark, how's everything on your end going?
Things are going pretty well up here in New York. Nice to talk to you. And this is the first 1970 of 2021. So here's to hopefully a really good year for PSG. I mean, we'll see, but good start, I guess, Overall.
People have already heard our thoughts on Pochettino. So let's just take a look at this game in particular. 2-1, you had the goal from McCarty and then Neymar with a penalty late on. Payet tried to make it a game late on with a goal, but it was always going to be PSG. They kind of dominated this match, played really well. Marseille, to their credit, did put up a good fight. I had tweeted that this was a really good test for PSG against a rival that wanted to come in and win. They beat PSG before at the Parc des Princes, so I thought that this was a really good test for Pochettino. He would have seen some things that he wants to work on in the training ground as we gear up for that round of 16 match against Barcelona in the Champions League. So let's just look at this game and then we can expand it a little bit more in what we've seen in the Pochettino era. But in terms of this game, what did you like? What didn't you like? What stood out to you?
I would agree. I thought PSG were the better team. I think they were pretty much the better team throughout. Marseille didn't really get a whole lot of great chances, and this was a little more of the same from what we've seen for these first three Pochettino matches. Kind of an open game, more pressing, more running, more energy, more, you know, physical exertion. And PSG had moments where they looked really good. They had moments where they were just sort of a pass or two away from really getting something going. They had those two goals called offsides at the beginning of the match.
Two great looking goals.
They were being aggressive. They were attempting to be aggressive. I think it was a little hard to get through some of this Marseille defense because they were playing. I guess one person's playing hard would be another person's playing dirty. And I think maybe not the first thing you think about with this game, but I'll think about going forward is just how cheap and dirty Alvaro Gonzalez played the whole match.
He's awful. I mean, like, what an awful human being.
No, he was hell bent on injuring somebody. Like, there were times, and there were at least twice where this happened, where Mbappe would pass the ball, take 3 steps, and then Gonzalez would just body check him with his elbow right to the ribs, right to the sternum. And then there was the one where Neymar got by him with the ball, and then Alvaro doesn't even go for the ball. He just steps in and just hip checks him. And it's just like there were, and then, oh, that wasn't even the best one. The best one was when Neymar's on the sideline, he gets the ball, he plays it down the line, and Alvaro, like a wrestling heel, went to like rake his eyes or his head or something. Like, yeah. Takes his 2 hands, grabs him by the head. Like, I mean, that was, I haven't seen a kind of performance like that in a long time where a guy just said, screw it, I'm just going to be blatantly dirty and I don't care if I get thrown out of this game or not.
I retweeted the screenshot where you can see Alvaro Gonzalez where he has both hands on Neymar's head, like you said, and he's trying to like pull him down behind like he's the Undertaker and it's Hell in a Cell or something. I mean, it's outrageous.
It was ridiculous. Like, I've never seen a guy do that. I've actually never seen a guy do that in a soccer match. I've never seen a guy try to go for the head with his 2 hands like that. But no, but PSG deserved to win that game. Thankfully they went to VAR and got that penalty all correct, because that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
That was pretty obviously a penalty. Everyone saw it was a penalty. Luckily, you know, that's why you have VAR, because if Dimitri Payet scores that goal and it's 1-1, then you're getting extra. Then you're getting the penalty kicks, and nobody wants to see that. You know, it was Waller, and there are things that PSG are going to have to do to improve. I think there's some bad habits that they have to, that Mauricio Pochettino is going to have to clean up a bit. But I'd say a lot, you know, of promising things so far in that game, you know, and in the three games in general, but in that game specifically, I think there were some really good things you could take from that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of good things. One thing you left out that I thought was really good is Icardi. This is a guy that a lot of PSG fans aren't really high on, to the 50 million euro price tag from Inter this past summer. Is kind of really the biggest signing that they had. And he's been injured. He hasn't really played a lot. I don't know if people forgot about his quality or what it is. Maybe he's not the flashy striker, Lewandowski, something like that, you know, with a lot of pace and movement. And maybe we're used to watching Cavani and his movement off the ball is world class. Icardi's not that kind of striker, but at the end of the day, you want your striker to put the ball into the back of the net. And that's exactly what he does. He's got two goals in two consecutive games coming back from injury. And look, he's a player that people just forgot, I guess, was on the team and just kind of just set him to the side and kind of dismissed him. But this is a guy that can really pay dividends for PSG against Barcelona as they go into this title chase in Ligue 1, because I think that's exactly what it's going to be. I don't think we're going to win this, you know, with 3 months to spare in the season. I mean, I think this is going to come down to the wire. Lille has a really good team. I think Lyon has a really good team, although they did lose Dembele, but I think they still have a solid squad. So I think Icardi is going to play a vital role if he can stay healthy. And a lot of people just assumed, and wrongfully so, you know, being from Argentina and Pochettino and, you know, oh, he's going to get the most out of him. I don't think it has anything to do with them being from the same country or whatever. I just think that maybe Pochettino's system, Icardi can thrive in, and we're already seeing that pay dividends. So really excited to see Icardi thrive in the system. I thought Verratti, you mentioned a couple of the goals that were called offside. He had just an incredible through pass into the box that eventually got over to Mbappe, I believe it was, who was offside. But his passing, elite. I thought Paredes played really well. If you had to pick out a couple players who just quite aren't there yet, Kurzawa, I mean, what do we really expect out of him at this point? He is what he is. And the crossing for PSG is just not there. Di Maria, once in a blue moon, can put in a good cross, but that's just simply not good enough. Considering how often PSG cross the ball into the box, we should be better at it, but we're just not. It's not consistent. I don't know if that's something Pochettino can teach or if we need to bring in some players who can do it, but it's just not a way that I see a whole lot of goals coming PSG's way from crosses. We struggle.
It's the bad habits they have to fix. And I think Florenzi can cross. I've seen him do it. It's just, you've got to put people in a position to get those crosses in.
And with Icardi being there is going to help finish some of those potentially.
Well, that's how they got the first goal. And if you notice, Mbappe and Icardi basically made the same run into the box. And Icardi luckily was the one that got his head on it, because I don't know if Mbappe is quite, that's his skill set.
No.
But, you know, Di Maria put that ball in really well, and Icardi got enough spin on it going downwards that it got by Mandanda. And then the one thing Icardi does really well, I think, maybe underratedly so, is he follows up. Like, there are some strikers that don't follow their, you know, there's that old saying in basketball, when you shoot, you know, you follow your shot into the paint and try to get the rebound. That's sort of an old basketball rule. You always follow your shot. Yeah. Icardi followed his shot. He put the header down and he didn't stop and like watch it. He anticipated the bounce and he got, you know, to the post. And that's what a good striker does. And I think Icardi is good in any system. I don't think he's a system striker. I think he's good at a lot of things. I think his movement is underrated. I think his hold-up play has been really good. Like, he's underrated at playing high. He plays, you know, high to low very well.
Do you put him as a top 10 striker in the world?
He hasn't played enough recently, so it's tough to say. But if he plays like he's playing now, yeah, absolutely. Because he can play that ball high, he can knock that ball down and play it wide, and then he can get back down low into the box and finish it off. He's more versatile than people give him credit for. I mean, he's not Cavani in the sense that Cavani just gave effort. He was a little, you know, a lot of running, a lot more running than Icardi does. Mm-hmm. But Icardi is able to, he's able to just be able to make that play. Like he's better on the ball than Cavani was. He's a little more technical. He understands the spacing, I think, a little bit better. Cavani made his runs, I think, a lot instinctually, and it worked for him. Not trying to just, you know, say one's better than the other. But
I think Icardi's finishing is much better than Cavani's.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that with Cavani, he's very much a volume striker. You know, he needed a lot of opportunities because his finishing wasn't quite that good. I mean, Icardi's, you know, finishing is better. But, you know, just say about those the crossing, it's like you can't have Levan Kurzawa in there and expect to have crosses. We know what he is at this point. Yeah. Like, what he's doing well, and I want to not just say what he's doing wrong. What he does well, I think, is he's good in the middle of the field reacting defensively. And I think he's not a bad defensive. He's gotten better defensively than he used to be. Like, he used to be a train wreck defensively. Now I think he's serviceable mm-hmm. on that side of the ball. His issue really is he's not very gifted technically. Like, he doesn't have that touch, like, to really put a ball in or to aim a ball the way he needs to. So I don't expect much from him. Florenzi, I think he needs to be more attacking. I think he's got to be more aggressive. I don't think he's playing aggressively enough and not, you know, he's good. And I think with Pochettino, I think that one of the habits that they'll break, hopefully, is Florenzi just sort of, you know, being passive. And you saw in the first few games Florenzi played, instinctually, he was dynamite. Like, he was doing exactly what they needed. And then Tuchel just sort of said, no more of that. You're going to be, you know, a boring Thomas Tuchel fullback where you do nothing. Like, literally, I don't mean to keep going back on this because it seems like an agenda at this point, but it's not. He didn't use his fullbacks at all, like, in any discernible way. So now there's a coach that's actually using the fullbacks. You sort of see the difference. And you see some of the places where they lack in their skill, because these are not complete fullbacks here that we have. We don't have a single guy right now. And the only guy that's somewhat close to that is Mitchell Bakker, but he's just way too young. And he's not at the point where he's good at it yet, but he has the best chance of all these guys to just be a really good all around fullback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're going to need to bring in some guys at that position.
That's what I wanted to bring up, because it's become obvious. If winning the Champions League is your goal, it's a lofty goal, but that's what it is for PSG, you're not going to win with Florenzi, Kurzawa, Bernat, or Bakker. Like, however many iterations of that you want to go with, maybe even throw Diallo in there as a right back, you know, or Kerr. Whoever we have right now in the squad that can play left back and right back is nowhere even close, maybe Florenzi slightly, but not even close to what you need to compete with a Bayern Munich, no, Manchester City. It's not even close.
Which is why I thought when Pochettino played Diallo there, I thought that was interesting. Like, I think there's a potential there. Like, I think there is. There's like a legitimate potential for Diallo to turn into a pretty solid left back. He's got the technical ability and he can play a little bit of center back. So I think that's worth exploring. If you're not sold on Bakker, and Kurzawa is clearly just not of that quality, I think Diallo is at least an interesting guy to get a look at that spot. And I thought they played a little better when he moved there, and they were a little, you know, I thought they got a little more solid defensively when they brought Kimpembe in and moved Diallo to left back. So we'll see with that.
But they need to make a signing in January, most likely probably at that left back position. I mean, I like, you know, Digne at Everton, who's a former PSG man. I think he would be great to bring back. I'm sure there's other options out there, but like left back in particular, like I think you can get by with Florenzi, like you said, maybe slot in Diallo if there's an injury or something, but Bernat's not coming back. Who knows what level he's at? I like Bakker, but he's not ready really for a big stage against Barcelona, and we know what Kurzawa is. Like, that position is a glaring hole in this team right now.
Yeah, I think they need it for depth purposes. I think it's clear they need a left back. And Bakker, again, I like what he does. I think he's improved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he, you know, play in the Champions League final level player? No. And he's not really close to that yet. No, and we wouldn't expect him to be close.
No, it's not his fault. No, absolutely not.
I think the midfield looks like 150 times better than it did. I mean, those guys are the chains are off them now. Like, they're making movement, they're making runs. Paredes looks like he can really thrive in this because Pochettino's style is so forward and it's so aggressive, and that fits exactly what I think Paredes can do when he's not sort of chained to any defensive responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to play defense like in the traditional way. Like, putting him in a low block and, you know, making him have to like keep up with guys in the center of the field is not what he's going to do. What he's going to do is he's going to make, you know, cheeky little movements and then make those passes. And Verratti can sort of play it halfway, where Verratti can play make, but he can also help you defensively. And then Herrera's been really solid as sort of a defensive center mid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been really solid he's limited in what he has to do, and he's doing the little bit that he has to do really well. And I think there's better, you know, the midfield is clearly, you know, there. I'll get to the negatives in a minute. I'm not just going to slobber all over Pochettino for an hour. I'll get to the negatives, but this midfield looks way more competent.
Yeah.
And we kept having this conversation about, PSG have a terrible midfield. They don't have players that can play in midfield. We need to sign more midfielders.
And it's like Christian Eriksen.
If you have a system that plays to the strength of your midfielders, you don't need to sign more midfielders. If you have a system that doesn't just rely on guys that play defense and, you know, give the ball to Neymar and pray, like, this was way better than that. Like, you know, these midfielders are given a little more responsibility. And again, it's not just get the ball to Neymar. That was the midfield's goal for the last 2 years. And, you know, Neymar came in, and we have to see what he looks like in a full game, because he wasn't quite up to where he needed to be, but he didn't look terrible. But I think having midfielders that can help him and are given the freedom to help him will be of benefit.
I don't know if we lost you there. I think you cut out there for a second. To just kind of pick up on your point there with the midfield, I think you're right. I think this team, and Guillaume is kind of chimed in on this, that we have so many good midfielders, but you're right. Tuchel just isn't playing them where they need to be, and the system is all wrong. And I think the biggest indictment is Pochettino comes in and immediately he puts Marquinhos back as a center back. And I think he's even stated publicly that he sees him as a center back. And so it's nice to see Marquinhos, even though he was solid as a defensive midfielder, it's nice to see him fall back into his natural position, and Pochettino's been able to rework that midfield, and everyone is clamoring for Christian Eriksen coming in as a creative guy. And I think Verratti could be that player. We saw that today with a few passes. He just needed to be, as you said, unleashed and put into the right position. So,
and part of this is that, and I think we never really debriefed on this, but it's like Tuchel was really a defensive coach. And I don't mean defensive as in, you know, defensive like he's the defensive person. I mean, like, his teams were set up tactically to be defensive and to be cautious and to sort of try to create quality chances as opposed to quantity chances. And now I think it looks different. It clearly looks different. Now, the problem with this, which I think is pretty obvious if you've been watching the last three games, is that they are much more exposed in the back end than they were under Thomas Tuchel's setup. Now, again, a lot of these things are trade-offs and stylistic preference. Do you think that you can outscore every opponent you play and give the other team a chance to maybe steal a goal or two, which is what happened in this game? Marseille just kind of stole a goal. Like, it wasn't, you know, they weren't dominating. They weren't, you know, PSG weren't, I think, in, you know, in bad situations. They weren't getting overwhelmed. But, you know, Marseille just sort of, because of the openness of the match, they sort of were able to sneak a goal in. PSG didn't shut the game down in the last, you know, with Tuchel, PSG would get a lead and 20 minutes, you know, there'd be 20 minutes to go in the game and they'd close up the shop. And it would make it harder for other teams to score, but PSG could never really get on a team. This is very different. And you see PSG struggling a little bit with some of this in that the pressing's not quite right. They're not quite in sync yet. And I think that's going to take a while. Like, I don't even know if they can fix that in the first 6 months he's here. Like, they're going to need to really learn how to press properly and to back press properly and to chase back and to do all the things that you need to do to play that style. Like, it took Klopp a while to, you know, have Liverpool play that way, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
It's not, that's tough. And that's not going to happen right away. There's going to be some issues with that. And one of the other things you're going to have an issue with is they're going to turn the ball over a lot more than they did. And you see it with Di Maria. Di Maria is turning the ball over at a higher rate now. I don't have numbers in front of me, but it's pretty clear that PSG are turning the ball over more in this system right now. And that's, again, because it takes a while to make this transition. So if you're expecting PSG to, you know, find this immediately, it's going to be a little difficult at first. And they haven't lost yet. And they're, you know, that since they've gotten progressively, I think, a little bit better in each game. So that's a good, you know, indicator that things are moving in the right direction. But you'll have some hiccups in this. Absolutely. And I think you just have to keep at it, because I think this style of play fits those players better. And I think it you know, PSG can win playing the way they played under Tuchel, but it's not going to be with these players playing their best football. It's going to be through sort of, you know, trying to steal a goal or two and shutting the game down. This is what I think PSG fans would rather see, which is a team that's a little more open in the back, but is way more aggressive offensively, and they cycle the ball more. I'm rambling a little bit. I'll get you into it. But one of the things they did really well, I thought, was, especially in the first half, they switched play very well. They got Kylian Mbappe into space by, you know, going from right to left, right to left, right to left, forcing the other team to not being stagnant, not just holding the ball, not being stagnant in one side. They played long balls. They switched up play. They weren't attacking the same way over and over again. You know, it wasn't sort of this slow, methodical pace. They're just playing with more energy, more oomph. And sometimes that means you're going to make more mistakes. But that's, again, I think that's a worthy trade-off at this point, because the team had just gotten so bad offensively. And it's not like they've scored, you know, 8 goals in a game yet. They scored 1 goal, 3 goals, and now 2. But you see the intent is there. And if PSG can start, you know, putting these passages of play together, I think they can be really dominant. And it's there. They just have to start making that work.
Yeah, no, I echo a lot of what you said there. And I mean, there were a lot of reasons why Tuchel was let go. One of them being that PSG were just playing atrocious football, attacking football. And so that's why Pochettino has come in. And I think what you're saying is, you know, giving the ball away and maybe being a little bit more open at the back. You can live with that if you're scoring 3-4 goals, especially against Ligue 1 competition. We're not quite there. As you said, we're still working on that. We're getting the system. The pressing still isn't there. That's very obvious. I think that's one of the glaring negatives, along with the crossing ability of some of our players not quite being at the level it needs to be. But it's a work in progress for Pochettino. I mean, it wasn't going to just be a quick fix. Luckily, we've got several games before that game against Barcelona, including one against Marseille once again in Ligue 1 action on February 7th. So lots of time, some quality opponents for Pochettino to work on this. I think he's going to thrive in this and in implementing his system. I do want to just talk about some of those other games a little bit. But before I do that, I just had to say, I just retweeted this. It came out and it looked like it was a quote from Neymar. And I don't know if this is true or not. I'm going to say it's probably not true, but I just want to get your reaction. So Neymar quoted, "The only star Payet will see in his career is the one he leaves on Uber Eats." How great is that? I really hope that that's accurate. That quote's true, because that is amazing.
Appleboy?
What's that? Yeah, exactly. The guy with the man bun, and definitely loves himself some Uber Eats. That's for sure. Well, let's just...
There's never been a more apt name to have on the front of Dimitri Payet's stomach than Uber Eats.
Yeah, no fat shaming here on the 1970, but we will move on. Let's take an aerial look at this. So Pochettino's first game was against Saint-Étienne. It was that 1-1 draw.
I'm going to fat shame him for a minute.
Okay.
If you are a professional athlete, he's not just some guy on the street. He's a professional athlete. He's paid millions of euros to do the job he's doing. Stay in fucking shape. I'm sorry. Stay in shape. You're paid to stay in shape. That's what you're paid for.
COVID has been tough for everyone. Who doesn't have the quarantine 15?
He has the quarantine 25.
Oh, Paye. Well, maybe we can get like a Peloton or something. He's got money. So I want to just – what have you seen from Pochettino, you know, the 1-1 draw against Saint-Étienne? Brest gave us a really good game, I thought. PSG won that game 3-0, but – you know, I thought they gave us a bigger challenge than Marseille, and it was a tough game, believe it or not. So anything really to talk about, or is it kind of the same thing where you're seeing Pochettino's kind of figuring out what's going on with his team, where the mistakes are, where he can improve? I mean, are you seeing anything from his lineup selection that would lead you to maybe infer something for the match against Barcelona? Any major changes? We talked about Marquinhos dropping back at center back. Is there something else that you've noticed that is a big difference? And one thing I want to get your thought on is like Mbappe, a little bit better today, but still not Mbappe quality. What's going on there? So take any of those in any order you want.
He's been tactically consistent. I think, I don't think there's a lot of experimenting going on. I think he's pretty much stayed with a similar starting 11. You know, the formation's pretty much the same. The key players are pretty much similar. I don't think there's this sort of massive amount of, you know, I think I'll put it like this. I think Pochettino knows what he likes to do. And I think he's putting that in. I don't think he's learning on the job here. I think he understands, you know, what basically the style he wants to play. And whoever is put in the game is expected to play to that style. And what has been, I really did talk about it mostly, you know, the issues with defensively, they're not as locked down as they were, and that's going to be expected. Offensively, I think it's better, obviously, and they're going to get better as this goes. Killian is just, I thought today out of the three games, this is probably his best game. Because I think he was trying to do more, but he's caught in between what kind of player he needs to be. Is he a on the ball playmaker, you know, all world, all round player? Is he a dominant wing player that needs to just keep making runs off the edge? Is he a striker? We're not really quite sure what he is. He's just sort of a great player, and it's going to be up to Pochettino to find, in his, you know, system, in his way of playing, how to have to learn how to use him best. And he has to figure out the things that he does well. it's not even like a, it's like a quarter life crisis he's in right now. You know, they say about a midlife crisis where you're not quite sure who you are. You know, you're getting older. We're not, neither of us are at that point yet, but you know, you can imagine. Yeah. I think he's at like a point in his career where I think he doesn't yet quite know what is his path going forward. Cause for so long it was sort of, you know, this pacey winger who can, you know, play off the ball, who has all this good ball skills, you know, that he was the 19, 20 year old who was the best young player in the game. Yeah. Now he's World not.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not the best young player. Cause can you consider him still like a super young player? No.
No.
Like he's getting to that point where he's about to start entering his prime. I just feel like he's trying to find himself a little bit and, you know, hopefully he figures it out. And I think once he does, he'll be untouchable. But right now we're just sort of going through growing pains. And he didn't have a lot of growing pains from, you know, the age of 17 to the age of 21. I think we're experiencing for really the first time him just not playing well for a long stretch of time. And, you know, let's see how he comes out of it. It'll be interesting to see, you know, you watch Neymar play. Neymar knows exactly who he is. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly who he is. He knows what kind of player he is. He knows what he does well. He knows what he doesn't do well. He's super confident in himself. And I think what you're seeing with Killian right now is a little bit of doubt, a little bit of confusion. He's not, it's like he's, you know, he's like 10% off where he needs to be. And that 10% is the difference between him scoring, you know, a lot of goals and him having a game like he had today, where he was in position, but he was a little offsides on one goal, a little offside on the other. Wasn't quite making the right pass. Can't get through people. People have sort of figured out how he likes to dribble. They've been able to sort of counter him in that way. It's just, you see that he's struggling to figure some things out. And I think we have to be patient with that because he's still, even at, you know, 75-80% of his power is still, you know, one of the better players in the world. So I'm not, you know, there's no thought of, you know, take him out of the lineup or anything. The dude's going to, yeah, you know, we're going to figure out. And part of this too, and I, it's been 5 months at this point, but I think that ankle injury didn't help him. You know, I think it sapped him a little of his speed. I don't think he's quite as sure of himself on that ankle. It's just, I think that injury has affected a little bit. And I think it sort of snowballed a little bit. So let's see if Pochettino can get him going. That's going to be one of his jobs. That's going to be one of his big jobs.
That's one of the big jobs. But you said Mbappe finding himself. I mean, he's acting like someone who's trying to find himself. He dyed his hair blue and he's kind of being a little bit petulant on the pitch. I think last game against Brest, you know, Sarabia didn't find him in the box and he kind of just threw his hands up in the air. I don't know. Something's going on in there. I don't know if it's contract situation or, like you said, he doesn't know what kind of player he wants to be. And maybe he just feels frustrated. People on Twitter are starting to tweet about it and realize it. And I don't know. It's just something's up. But like you said, it's Pochettino's job to figure out what is the problem and get the best out of him. That's why he was brought here. But Mark, we've got we're going to keep this show relatively short, but we do have a couple questions that I wanted to get to. This one comes from, let's see, at @PSG_Canada. What formation will PSG succeed in? And also, what's our best front three going forward? I like a 4-3-3 formation, kind of traditional. For me, the front three is really difficult, but I think Icardi, Neymar, and Mbappe would be my three. But what do you say?
That'd be my three.
Yeah.
I think it's clear at this point that Di Maria is not a everyday starter anymore. I think his extending him will be, I don't think you want to give him a long-term extension at this point in his career. And he just seemed like he has that step or that it just like, I think Neymar, Mbappe, Icardi is the right way to go here. And Di Maria came off the bench. Moise Keane comes in off the bench.
That's a great sub to have.
Now you're five deep. Sarabia makes you six deep. That's a pretty good, you know, that's a pretty good looking front, you know. Sorry, that's pretty good looking, you know, attacking bench and in teams. So, like, I think that's pretty good. Like, I don't, yeah. And, you know, if, you know, I'm not going to speculate too much, but if you sign Dele Alli, that would probably mean that you're, you know, replacing with Dele Alli. And then Dele Alli becomes that guy that you bring off, that is sort of that fourth attacking player.
I don't get so that they, signing. He's like a player that is like a player by name only. Like, people have, does anyone who wants to sign him actually watched him play? Like, he was playing against like some pub team. Did you see that Tottenham played this team where like people were watching the game from their bedroom? It's like Marine, yeah, or something like that. Like, Tottenham doesn't want anything to, and it's like, who was Tottenham? They're not like this great Manchester City, whatever, Manchester United, Bayern Munich. Like, he can't even get a game there. Why do we want this guy so much?
No, part of there's a couple reasons for that. Part of that is that Mourinho doesn't want to play. That's part of it. And the and if Mourinho doesn't want to play him, Mourinho's not going to play. The second is he was really good for a stretch, and I wouldn't, you know, take a flyer on him and see if Pochettino can get something out of him, because he's still like 25, 26 years old. It's not, sure, yeah, this isn't a, you know, this isn't a washed up bum. Like, this isn't a guy in his 30s playing in the pub league. This is a guy who was starting for the, you know, for England national team in the World Cup. Like, this is not bum. So I, you know, maybe change of scenery, maybe going to a coach that believes in him.
If the price is right, if the price is right.
Yes, it always has to be prefaced.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, yeah, I think I think it's going to be PSG right now playing a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 sort of pseudo hybrid looking thing with Verratti sort of mixing in between midfielder and 10. So it was interesting to see they didn't put Neymar in the 10 position, really. They did when they brought out Di Maria, is they put Neymar on the left and they put Mbappe on the right, which I guess, I don't know what else I would have expected them to do, but that's what they did. So I'm wondering if Neymar is going to stay on the left and Mbappe goes back to the right, as opposed to sort of Neymar pinching in centrally and playing on the left, which is what they were doing under Tuchel. So that was an interesting little shift that they made when Neymar came in the game, if anyone noticed that.
No, have you here to point these things out. Let's move to the next question. This is something he actually sent me a DM, and I meant to get back to him. So this one comes from @McNally_me. What are you hearing on the league on TV stuff, and how do you think it ends up being resolved? And so I don't know if you've been really following this, but Media Pro basically made these huge promises, you know, billion dollars plus over 4 years, and the LFP didn't really do their due diligence to make sure that they could pay that and set certain parameters. And basically you got blinded by the money, and oh, what do you know? Media Pro is now bankrupt, and they paid like less than 10% of the total amount they were supposed to. And now they're scrambling. And I believe Canal was going to pick up the rights, but now they're playing hardball because they're like, hey, we're the only player in town, and we're not going to pay those Media Pro prices. We want something much lower. And so this is having a major impact on French teams around Ligue 1 at a time when they're already impacted by not having any fans in the stadium and commercial endorsements and all of that. So, like, what do you – I think Jonathan Johnson had sent something out, a tweet about, you know, now is the time for, like, Amazon, one of these big tech giants, to come in and pick up the rights to broadcast. And I should preface, we're talking about broadcasting games in France. BN Sports, if you're in the United States, still going to be your provider. But in France, it's very much a chaotic situation. Teams aren't getting money. I wrote a piece about how PSG should try to take advantage of this and maybe pick off some of these top players in Ligue 1. And, you know, those teams will get some money and PSG can fill some holes in their squad. But, like, how do you see this playing out? Can PSG maybe take advantage of this and get theirs? Who do you think? I mean, do you think an Amazon would come in and buy the rights? Anything about this current situation? It's kind of a mess.
Okay. All right. So here's the thing. I don't think PSG should be worried about what players they can get from Ligue 1 teams. I think they should be worried about how to keep the league afloat. Mm. And look, Ligue 1 is the worst run all of the major European League. Horribly run. They've been horribly run for decades. And they've been run, it's cronyism, it's bad business decisions, it's not understanding how the world is changing. And you see it in their officiating when you know, you can basically take out a chainsaw and hack off Neymar's leg and you still only maybe get a yellow card.
We saw like, that today for us. Just kind of like, yeah.
They just don't understand how the modern game is supposed to look and feel. And they made the mistake in April of canceling the last season, which was a mistake. It's been proved a mistake. I said it was a mistake at the time. And it's been proven to be a huge mistake because no other top five league did it. And PSG and those teams lost a ton of money. And then they try this Media Pro scheme and it doesn't work because because Media Pro didn't actually have any money. They didn't have any capital. They tried to sell them on a dream that they could get a bunch of people to subscribe to watch right. League on football.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what a horrible business plan. Like, you're going to make people pay 30 euros to watch Angers versus Brest. Like, that's your plan.
It's almost as dumb as starting a PSG blog.
Almost, not as bad, but almost. But you know, in France, I've been to France. I see what people do in France. You know what they do in France?
They eat at cafes.
They go to restaurants. They go to nightclubs. They don't sit around and watch League on Football. Like League on Football is still really niche in their country. It's not Italy. It's not like it is in Spain. It's kind of a niche product mm-hmm. that there are really hardcore fans of.
They're cultured. They're not going to sit at home and eat Doritos and watch, you know, Ligue 1. You know, they're out there at the Louvre and they're, you know, having their wine at a cafe. They got things to do. Going to a show, a play, whatever. Going to a theater.
But here's the point, though. If you see a game get look at a team like Lorient. If they had a full stadium, the amount of people they would have in the full stadium, probably about 80% of the people that actually care about Lorient as a club. It's like it's not like a club in England where you have, you know, it's more provincial. It's like it was in England in the 80s, where, you know, there'd be this small town where everyone would show up to watch the game. In France, it's just like these teams don't have followings outside of France, outside of their town.
And that's mostly due to the poor running of the league and poor marketing and everything else. I mean, say what you will about the Premier League, but they're great at marketing. I don't think it's the best league, but it's the best marketed. That's why people in the United States, you'll see people walking around with like a Burnley shirt. Like, how the hell do you know what Burnley is? Could you find it on a map? No, but the Premier League markets and maybe a player and they like the colors and they start following them. Ligue 1 hasn't figured that out.
If you don't live in Saint-Étienne, you're not a fan of Saint-Étienne. Like, there's no Saint-Étienne fans that didn't originally live in Saint-Étienne.
Right.
Or weren't, you know, maybe they were around in the 70s when they won stuff and they're like 60 years old and they like them. But, like, it's poorly run. What's going to have to happen eventually is that the top clubs in Ligue 1 are going to have to do what they did in England in the 90s and go, look, we're going to build our own league. We're going to do our own Premier League. We're going to do our own Elite League, have, you know, 12 charter members. And then any, you know, teams that qualify up, we'll add as we go. But we'll start with those 12 and we'll negotiate our own rights and we'll have our own governing body and it'll be run properly. And that's that. And keep the LFP completely mm-hmm. out of it.
Either like that or
out of top flight football in England. Mm. The LFP is going to have to go. Ligue 1 does not, you know, the French football does not advance unless the LFP is taken away from the top flight. That's what's going to have to happen. And it's going to have to happen sooner rather than later. And these clubs are going to have to put their differences aside. PSG, Marseille, mm-hmm. OL, Saint-Étienne,
Lille,
Monaco, mm-hmm. Nantes, Rennes, Bordeaux. They're all going to have to come together and say, look, if we want this thing to survive and maybe even thrive someday, we're going to have to get this incompetent group of buffoons out of the way.
It's time to go.
time to go. No, but it's like they're not even strong enough to advocate for the league to stay open. Do you think for 1 second the Premier League was going to ever not finish that season? They have stroke. They have, you know, influence. Ligue 1 has none of that. They just got bitch slapped by that, you know, by that Minister of Sports lady and did nothing about it and just let it happen.
The reporting was they let that happen partly because of the Media Pro contract. They figured, well, okay, well, we'll just forego the rest of the season. It's fine. We'll kick back, put our feet up, and we'll collect this fat check from Media Pro. It hit them in the ass because now they're bankrupt and now there's no money coming in from the TV act and Canal's not going to pay them. It is a mess. They gambled and they screwed up because of incompetent leadership. For PSG, the solution is what you said, join another league, Serie A, La Liga, whatever. Or, you know, maybe the European Super League. Other than that, I don't know what you do. It's a mess. Mark, we're going to get out of here. One quick thing. I want you to fill in the blank here because our old friend Thomas Tuchel is being rumored to potentially go to Chelsea. So Tuchel to Chelsea would be blank. Fill it in.
Tuchel to Chelsea. Oof, I'm not good at these. I guess the cliche would be top. Hmm. Say all the time, like top or something like that. He'd be fine there.
Yeah, I think so too. You
know, he'd be fine for the first year and a half. And then they get tired of him, and eventually he'd wear out his welcome, like he does everywhere. Because he's not built to be anywhere more than a year or two, you know, two and a half, 3 years. I'm surprised his personality is not that of somebody who's long for any particular one club. Just not how he is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are we going to talk about Neymar probably extending his contract? Do we want to save that for when it actually happens?
I think for when it actually happens. There's been a lot of rumbling about him and Mbappe. It's been like that for a while now. I don't know if there's anything new. I think he's going to sign. It's just like, when is it going to happen? Same with Mbappe. They can't go anywhere else, really.
Look at, you know, if you've been following Twitter, his Instagram post, which was pretty good. And then his, he's embracing the shirt, embracing the logo. And it's like.
Well, yeah, that's what at Saha Saria 23, thoughts on Ney kissing, eating the badge. I missed that. Did we get a badge kiss?
We got a badge bite.
Oh, badge bite. Okay. All right. Again, more of the Uber better. Eats thing.
Yes.
Interesting.
It's like he actually does want to stay, it seems like. And it's like, all right, let's get it done.
Like, that's what I don't understand. How difficult is this? Neymar, what do you want? That's too much. Can you do this? Okay, that works. Here you go. Sign it. Like, why is this like a months long process?
Well, it always is a long process.
But why? It doesn't need to be.
Well, it's a big contract. They got to work, but I think they're in the right direction. I think it's going to be a matter of time at this point. Nobody else is going to be able to pay him what PSG can pay him. So I guess that's what we'll talk about. And we'll celebrate when he signs. Cause I think it'll be, I'll probably write an article about it too, at some point if it happens. I think it's a really big deal that they re-sign him. Like, I think that's a huge deal.
Huge deal.
Like, just in the history of the club. Because like, it really does prove something about PSG that I think a lot of people were maybe in denial about outside of, it validates what it validates initial signing, and it proves that PSG are a big club that top players will stay at. It's not just sort of Zlatan showing up for 4 years, having his time and leaving. Like a top world-class, you know, elite player will stay.
I mean, he would be a marquee name, but let's not forget, Verratti is a top 10 midfielder. He's signed long-term. Marquinhos, top 10 defender. He stayed. Thiago Silva, how many contracts did he sign? Cavani, you know. I mean, it's been the groundwork has been laid for players to stay here. I know that those in the mainstream media may not want to admit it, but Neymar doing it, you're right, would be like, holy shit, okay, Neymar staying. And then, boom, Mbappe is too, another 2 or 3 years. So, like, yeah, this could be a huge step up for the club. Very promising, but we could talk about that when it actually happens. But I don't know. I don't know when it will happen. Hopefully this season, but maybe it'll be this summer. Who knows?
All right.
So we'll get to that. But Mark, thank you as always for joining me. How can people find you on social media if they want to give you a shout out?
They can find me at MarkDamon9.
Wonderful. And as always, I am at PSG Talk. Wherever you find this podcast, leave us a review, like it. Surprisingly, we're still the only PSG-only podcast in English. So support us, you know, give us a like and review us. Always appreciate it. And we will leave you with that. Thank you as always for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Au revoir for now.